Blog Talk Radio.
My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. I dare not trust the sweetest frame, but wholly trust in Jesus' name. Christ the His face, I rest on His unchanging grace. In every high and stormy gale, my anchor holds within the veil.
Welcome to the Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and I want to thank you once again for taking time out of your busy schedule to join me on the radio broadcast this morning. On my video, or on my Facebook page, is an eye-opening video of the devastating floods all across southern Iran, even in a beautiful historic city of Shiraz, where my Iranian friend Maral's parents live. Please pray for these suffering Iranian people. The flood damage is devastating. There are over 20 people killed so far because of the floods, over 68 injured. And you can see this video and just reach out and pray for these suffering Iranian people going through this during a time of what is supposed to be a celebration of the Maruz Persian New Year, and instead they're fighting for survival. This morning on the Cross in the Desert, I want to continue being a strong voice for Nazreen Satouda. Her story is in our book, Dear God, Please Bring Freedom to Iran. Just recently, Nazreen Satouda went before the judge and was sentenced to over 38 years in prison. Nazreen Satouda is a worldwide recognized human rights attorney in Iran. And since her unjust imprisonment, my good friend Nazanin Afshinjam has started a worldwide campaign to bring attention and put pressure on the government to free Nazreen Satouda. It has been an amazing campaign so far. People holding up pictures, "We are Nazreen," all across Facebook, all across Instagram. I encourage you to do the same. This morning on the broadcast, I want to read an article written by a friend of mine. She's on Instagram. Her name is Shaparek Shahzadeh. And she has a very powerful article about Nazarene Satuta, and it's published by Time. And the title of the article is "This Iranian Lawyer Saved My Life. Now We Must Save Hers." And so what I want to do for the next several minutes is ask you to please take the time to just settle back and to listen to this powerful story as I read it, because we are going to get to continue to mobilize our campaign and to speak out for Nazarene until she's set free. Nazanin Afshinjam is a powerful human rights activist. She spearheaded a campaign during the time that Rahane Jabari was in prison and was very, very passionate about her campaign. In the past, Nazanin has spoken up for the victims of juvenile executions in Iran. She is a world-renowned, recognized human rights activist, and she will accomplish this job. She's very tough, very determined, very successful. This morning, I want you to hear from someone that benefited from the powerful human rights services of Nazarene Satuta. Her name is Shaparik Shahrazadeh, and here is her story. The lawyer who saved my life was just sentenced to 38 years in prison and 148 lashes in Iran. I first met Nazarene Satuta, an internationally renowned human rights lawyer and our country's foremost campaigner for women's rights and against child executions, when I was being harassed and violently intimidated by Iran's intelligence services. My crime? I had removed my headscarf in public and put the video online in protest of Iran's forced hijab law and the stifling control over women's bodies and choices that it represents. I finally felt empowered, Shaparik says, being part of this White Wednesday movement in Iran, where every Wednesday women would courageously defy the regime in removing their headscarves or wearing a white shawl in support of those who did, and which quickly grew into a near daily event. I was an ordinary woman partaking in an extraordinary movement. For this, I would go on to be arrested a total of 3 times last year. I was beaten and brutalized in prison. My only breaks from the psychological torture or solitary confinement. It was the most frightening experience of my life, not just the pain, but that I felt so alone, suffering in solitude. But then Nazarene showed up. She told me that my struggle is her struggle, the struggle of all Iranian women, that I am not alone, and that she would not relent until I am free. Knowing Nazarene was there for me gave me solace and sustained me through it all. She courageously protested, spoke to the media, and navigated the complex and opaque Iranian legal system on my behalf. After my third arrest and imprisonment for removing my headscarf, I was told by Iranian intelligence that when, rather than if, I'm convicted, I would never see my 8-year-old son, Barbad, again. They had already detained Barbad with me the last time. Seeing him in handcuffs broke my heart. So when Nazarene got me out on bail, I immediately fled the country with my son, and my trial proceeded without me. Nazarene informed me that throughout the trial, the judge refused to hear my side and had already made his mind up. My fate was predetermined, as it has been for so many of the women who stood trial before me. However, unlike those women, and thanks to Nazarene, I was safely outside the country with my son when my 20-year sentence was handed down. Today, I live in exile in Canada, where I am seeking asylum. As dramatic and draconian an outcome it may seem, Nazarene was unsurprised. Given her experience representing human rights defenders in Iran, she had only understood that such cases could not be won in the courthouse, but only in the court of public opinion. That is why she revealed my prosecutor's name to the press and exposed his record of oppression, demonstrating that he was more a persecutor than a prosecutor. Nasreen was then herself arrested in June, 3 days after representing me at my trial. This persecutor had sought his revenge and filed a criminal complaint against her for her courageous conduct in my case. Intelligence officers showed up unannounced at her home and brought her to the notorious Evin prison in Tehran. While her initial arrest was based on the complaint of the prosecutor in my case, once they had her in detention, further false and fantastical charges were added. Among her charges were membership in human rights organizations and women's rights activism, for which she was accused of propaganda against the state and encouraging prostitution. She was also accused of, quote, appearing at the judiciary without Islamic hijab. It is true that Nasreen has attended court without a headscarf in an expression of solidarity with me. It is also true that she is a member of human rights organizations, including groups united in defense of women's rights, persecuted minorities, political prisoners, peace, and against capital punishment. But these realities attest to her virtues, not crimes. Nasreen's trial was conducted in absentia, and she did not respect any basic rights or a fair trial. Now she is facing a sentence of 38 years in prison and 148 lashes. On Saturday, March 9th, in honor of International Women's Day, I marched for Nasreen alongside thousands of women, all cultures and creed in Canada, where I currently live. I was in awe as they raised their voices freely without fear, for now we can hardly dream of such marches in Iran. I looked back on my first White Wednesday in Iran, when my heart beat faster than it ever has, and remembered the shadow of fear cast by the authorities. I was struck by the contrast with my new home. I am now surrounded by women who feel free to be themselves. That day, I marveled at how we marched together in solidarity and sisterhood. I felt grateful not only to be free, but for the ability to assemble and protest for those who were not. When I was in prison, Nasreen was my only hope. She did everything in her power to liberate me. I'm not only able to raise my voice freely today because of her tireless activity and advocacy on my behalf. That's who she is. Nasreen cannot remain silent in the face of injustice, and neither should we. While countries were quick to condemn her imprisonment, with the U.S., U.K., EU, France, and Canada issuing statements, only a day after news of Nasreen's conviction broke, they courageously allowed Iran to assume leadership in the UN Commission on the Status of Women, where it will now oversee all allegations of abuses against women. Not only does this protect the impunity that allows for Nasreen's unjust imprisonment, but it effectively rewards Iran for it. Their silence at the UN speaks louder than their statements for Nasreen and abandons her and other women to the terrors of Tehran's torturers. The world must instead send a clear message. Iran will not be treated as an equal member of the international community if it does not treat women as equal members of humanity. They certainly must not be allowed to lead in these institutions as long as women leaders like Nasreen languish in prison. Countries should use their clout at the UN and other international organizations to pass resolutions calling for Nasreen's release and remove and block Iran from leadership positions until it does so. Nasreen should be the one occupying international leaderships of petitions for women's rights, which she has promoted so effectively in Iran. France's President Macron recognized this in appointing her to the G7 Advisory Council on Gender Equality, sending a personal letter to Iranian authorities expressing the esteem in which he holds her. Other G7 leaders, such as Germany's Angela Merkel and Canada's Justin Trudeau, the founder of this council, should do the same. Whether from governments or the grassroots, civil service or civil society, other international groups should similarly send Nazreen a public invitation to play a role in their work. Not only could they benefit from her wisdom as I did, but they could offer her life-saving attention and protective cover from her jailers. We all know who these jailers are. We will never forget the names of those who arrested, prosecuted, sentenced, and tortured us. Nor will we forget those who instructed them to do it. These individuals should not be allowed to travel and enjoy the freedoms abroad that they deprive Iranian women of at home. Democracy should use global magistracy laws to issue target sanctions against these officials who are abusing human rights. We and can start with these involved in Nazreen's unjust imprisonment. But our most powerful tool is freedom, which remains out of reach for so many around the world, and especially for Nazreen, despite her dedicating her life to protecting it. We must use our freedom to help Nazreen secure hers, whether on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, or in public protests and petition. We must be her voice. In doing so, we will give Nazreen the life-saving message she has given me and so many others. Nazreen, you are not alone. A powerful, wonderful article by Shaparik. And I salute her for the powerful, strong words of support for Nazreen. How do I get involved? Take a picture. Say on the picture, "We are Nazreen." At the top, use the hashtag "We are Nazreen." Put it on my Facebook page or wherever you choose, and let's stand in solidarity demanding her release from Iranian prisons. I now want to take the time to shift gears to another selective example of selective outrage. I think you would join me and millions of others of condemning the evil terrorist attack against Muslims in New Zealand a couple of weeks ago. We are outraged. We stand in solidarity with Muslims and condemn this evil act. In saying that, though, I want to talk about this evil act and the silence of the media for the Christians in Nigeria. This is an article from Breitbart, and I'm going to read it to you, but it makes the point that I want to talk about this morning. It is called Selective Outrage, this game that is played by the media. Political leaders and public figures were falling all over themselves a couple of weeks ago to condemn the mosque attacks in New Zealand, while dozens of Christians were slaughtered by Muslims in Nigeria to the sound of crickets. The mosque attacks, as I said, were indeed a horrific affair and worthy of universal condemnation. Presidents, prime ministers, royalty, and religious leaders rushed to extend their condolences to victims and their families, as well as they should, while decrying the hate that purportedly motivated the shootings. We agree that should be done. Without exception, the mainstream media gave top billing to these shootings in New Zealand, with newspapers carrying the story on their front pages and television news channels leading off their broadcasts with the story. The bizarre aspect of the coverage was not, in fact, the attention paid to a heinous crime committed in New Zealand, but the absolute silence surrounding the simultaneous massacre of scores of Christians by Muslim militants in Africa. Breitbart News alone reported among major news outlets, Fulani jihadists racked up a death toll of over 120 Christians over the past 3 weeks in central Nigeria, employing machetes and gunfire to slaughter men, women, and children, burning down over 140 homes, destroying property, and spreading terror. The New York Times did not place that story on their front page. In fact, they did not cover it at all. Apparently, when assessing all the news that's fit to print, the massacre of African Christians did not even measure up. The same can be said for the Washington Post, the Chicago Tribune, the Detroit Free Press, the LA Times, and every other major paper in the United States. The news shows from these three major television channels, they did not even mention the story, and nor did CNN or MSNBC. Now, you may ask, why? There are several possible explanations for this remarkable silence, and none of them is good. Since, in point of fact, Muslim radicals kill Christians around the world with alarming frequency, it is probable that one more slaughter did not seem particularly newsworthy to the decision makers at major news outlets. Muslims being killed, on the other hand, may strike many as newsworthy precisely because it is so rare. A second motive for the media silence around the massacre of Christians in Nigeria may be geopolitical and racial. New Zealand is a first world country where such things are not supposed to happen, whereas many people still considered Africa to be a backwards place where brutal killings are par for the course. That's another possibility. Moreover, the slaughter of black Christians in Africa may not enkindle rage among Westerners the way that the murder of white and brown Muslims in New Zealand would. Finally, a last possibility of why the media has ignored this. Finally, the story simply does not play to the political agenda that many mainstream media would like to advance. How much mileage, you ask, can be gained from Muslims murdering Christians when Christians in America are often seen as an obstacle to the progress desired by liberals? The left sees Christians in the United States as part of the problem and seeks to undermine their credibility and influence at every turn rather than embolden them. Anti-Christian bias has been rightly called the last acceptable prejudice, one that few bother condemning. No one much cares about offending Christians, wrote the Coalition of African American Pastors in an essay last Tuesday, quote, "In fact, mocking, belittling, and blaspheming Christianity is becoming a bit of a trend in our culture. Anti-Christian bigotry truly is the last acceptable prejudice." The hypocrisy on display is astounding, the pastors continue to say. Christianity is the dominant religion of our country. It is the foundation of our government and morality, and yet Christians are treated as fair game for mockery and insult. Christians are by far the most persecuted religious group in the world, but the mainstream media routinely ignores this fact as if it were unimportant or uninteresting. As a result, many people do not even realize how widespread the persecution is, or that 75% of the victims of religious persecution around the world are Christians. Whatever the reason or reasons for the media silence surrounding the most recent massacres of Christians in Nigeria, as well as numerous other events, it should give right-thinking people pause. By all means, the lethal shooting of dozens of Muslims in New Zealand is a massive story and merits extensive coverage, but it only stands to reason that similar coverage should be devoted to the slaughter of Christians. For the moment, it serves as a poignant reminder that a double standard is at work when it comes to news coverage, and that is Christians who inevitably draw the short straw. This is Thomas D. Williams, and he is the author of this story on Breitbart, an excellent, excellent analysis of this ferocious double standard that is going on. There should be outrage at New Zealand, and I agree with that 100%, but there should also be outrage at the way that Christians are slaughtered in Nigeria and nothing whatsoever is said about them at all. It is terrible. It is unacceptable. And that is why I am speaking out about it. I want to mention something very quickly. My dear friend Manoush Bakhtiari had an interview recently with Peacemark, and it's about our book, Dear God, Please Bring Freedom to Iran. And they did a nice article, 600 words or more, peacemark.org. And you can see this article up on my Facebook page. We are so thankful for them and the great work that they have done talking about human rights violations in Iran. And they took the time to write about our book, Dear God, Please Bring Freedom to Iran. I really appreciate you, Peacemark. Thank you so much for your time and your effort to promote our book. The story of Nazreen Satuta is in our book, Dear God, Please Bring Freedom to Iran. And my dear friend Manoush is going to have an interview on a prominent Swedish radio station this evening, and I'm thinking of her and praying for her. She does a great job of talking about our book. She's had several interviews, one with Voice of America in Farsi, one with a London-based media outlet, and it just goes on and on. I want to thank you so much for taking time this morning, and please respond to what is happening to Nazreen Satuta. Please be a voice for her. Please speak out for her, and please join Nazanin and the millions of others around the world speaking out for Nazreen Satuta's release. And please also visit my special page, Praying for the Persecuted Church. It is a good page with lots of traffic. This article will be up on the page so you can read it for yourself. Please be a voice for the Christians who are being slaughtered in Nigeria. Thank you so much for taking time this morning, for joining me on a broadcast. I will see you this Thursday, once again on the cross in the desert.
My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. I did not trust the sweetest spring, but wholly trust in Jesus' name. Christ the His face, I rest on his unchanging.